Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Before we get started, I want to remind everyone that we're now in our fall pledge drive, and you can donate today at kboo.fm/give. We aren't in the station to take your calls, but you can show your support by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the donate button. Or you can also mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. If you donate now through October 31st, your contribution will be matched dollar per dollar up to $4,500. Once again, thanks for supporting KBOO. Verizon is planning on building a drone facility along the Willamette River in North Portland. Until recently, few people knew about this plan, and it seems that Verizon hoped to get the project approved away from the public eye. However, neighborhood activists got wind of these plans and are now fighting back. Today we talk with Leah Holland with Fight for the Future and Matt Stein with Green Anchors about why they think this drone testing facility is not only inappropriate, but a harmful addition to the neighborhood. Matt and Leah, welcome to Locus Focus.
Hey, thanks. So great to be here.
I wanted to start by having you talk about where you guys are located, because it ties in a lot to the story we're going to be telling today about this proposed drone facility. So let's talk about the part of North Portland that you're both in and what it's like and how it would be impacted by this facility.
I'm a homeowner in North Portland who's regularly down on the waterfront. I'm an avid kayaker and runner as well. I run across the St. John's Bridge several times a week right next to where this proposed drone testing site is going to be. And I really dislike drones for a number of reasons, and I also don't want to be complicit in the testing of any type of military technology. So this would affect me a lot, both my mental health and my experience of the Willamette River.
And how about you, Matt?
I'm a St. John's resident, Cathedral Park area, actually, very close to the site, and actually operate the site that is immediately adjacent to the proposed facility.
Let's talk a little bit about this facility that you operate, Green Anchors. What is that?
Yeah, we call it Green Anchors because when we started this, we wanted to focus on kind of eco-minded businesses and artists and other alternative kind of approaches to living and doing business. And so, and since it's a former shipyard, that's where the Anchors comes from. Anyways, we have about 40 tenants here at any one time. A lot of them are long-term tenants that are small businesses, from mushroom growers to solar panel systems builders and sellers. And then we have a lot of artists, as well as people doing short-term projects, building their own tiny homes and converting school buses to live in, stuff like that.
I think a lot of people in Portland are not really familiar with the St. John's area unless you live there. St. John's has traditionally been an area that people either don't know about or don't want to think about, or just think it's a place where we put all our garbage. And so I wonder how that notion that a lot of Portlanders have of St. John's actually relates to your experiences living there.
This area of the river has been heavily industrialized for the last 100 years. This property that we are on was a working shipyard for since the early 1900s or even before that. And there's a tremendous amount of environmental damage that has occurred here over all those years, and now we live on a Superfund site that is the Willamette River, and we're in the process of seeing that cleaned up. But that's taking we're 20 years into that process, and the cleanup is now finally starting. So we've got the trains are heavy out here. We got a lot of train traffic, a lot of truck traffic going to the various port terminals out here. So it's a busy place.
Well, actually, the first time I ever went to St. John's was to go to the dump. In those days, this was back in the 70s, that's where the dump was in Portland, was in St. John's. They closed that dump several years after I moved here. I'm not sure what the legacy of that dump is. But the other thing that I would notice when I go to St. John's on occasion was actually it was very beautiful. It was very unlike most of Portland, which doesn't have a relationship to the river, but St. John's was really a river community, still is a river community. And I want to talk a little bit about that relationship to the river that St. John's has, Leah, and how that affects people who live there.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that exactly what you said, that this area has been heavily industrialized and, used because of its proximity to the river, but it's also an incredibly beautiful place and a place that I'm really in love with and happy to be. I think that these historic misuses of the river are something that people are standing up more and more against and demanding justice for. And those who live here specifically are very sensitive to further misuse of the river and further corruption of this place that we love and of our daily lives. You know, to a certain extent, thinking about the idea of drones flying up and down the Willamette, they've already poisoned the water. Now they're going to poison the air. Like, what's enough? And I know that my outrage is shared by a lot of the community here in wanting this project not only to not happen, but wanting a different process where we're made more aware of what's happening in our own backyards much sooner so that we can speak up against it.
Yeah, it is a very complicated relationship that people in this area have with the river, because everyone wants to enjoy the river, everyone thinks it's here for our benefit, but it's, you know, half of the people here still believe that you can't even go in the water without suffering some sort of chemical burn, and, you know, at least that's not the case anymore, but it's a slow process of getting of the community becoming re-engaged with the river and feeling like it's a place that we can be and enjoy, and it's just one more thing on top of it fleets of drones buzzing overhead is not going to help that process.
Do you feel that St. John's is still really disconnected from the rest of Portland as it was 40, 50 years ago? I'm thinking about how St. John's, like a few other neighborhoods that are, well, one other neighborhood in particular that's really overlooked, which is Linton, and also my neighborhood, Selwood, used to be their own cities, and they were annexed to Portland around the turn of the last century. But I'm not sure what the motivation was for Portland to annex St. John's. It seems different than the motivation for annexing Selwood, which was really to help Selwood become a little bit more integrated into the rest of the region and actually have a road that went from Portland to Selwood instead of having to take a boat. In the case of St. John's, it does appear that Portland's interest in St. John's had less to do with providing more services for the people of St. John's and had more to do with just grabbing the land that's along the river for other purposes. What do you think the historic relationship between Portland and St. John's has been, and how do you see that maybe changing now?
I think the historic relationship between colonizers and St. John's has been one of exploitation. You know, I run up into Forest Park, and there's this little bridge where you can look out over St. John's and the bridge, and somebody's graffitied there right now: "This is stolen land." And I think about that every day. You know, that this place is the original homeland of First Nations, and here we are poisoning it and exploiting it. And I think that, you know, the city of Portland would be motivated by the same reasons that anyone was ever motivated to take this land, is that it's productive, it's ideally situated, it's, you know, it was beautiful, it's becoming beautiful again, and they want it for themselves. And I think that, you know, we're carrying on a long tradition of saying no this time to Verizon, and this time hopefully with a chance to win. But this has been going on for a very long time.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a saint James John's was, but I would imagine some of the native people that lived here when he showed up might not have characterized him as such. But yeah, it is. It's just one, as Leah said, just a long progression of takeovers from people that were already here.
Who was St. John?
He was the founder of St. John's. He plotted out this area, is my understanding. I don't know how much he actually owned versus just plotted out the township, I guess.
Let's start talking a little bit about this drone facility. Where would they like to locate it?
The parcel of this old shipyard that is called the North Marcom parcel is between us and the Toyota unloading facility that is part of Terminal 4 of the Port of Portland. And the port acquired the property back in 2007 with the plan to expand the Toyota facility. Those plans fell through, and 13 years later, just sitting on the vacant land, now this project has been proposed for it.
The port is always talking about how they need more industrial land, and that's been the argument for them to make efforts to industrialize Hayden Island and other natural areas along the river that have still remained at least a semblance of what their former selves. In this case, it seems like this piece of land has been vacant for a really long time. And what seems interesting, and some people that I'm working with in the Brady River campaign are concerned about the fact that supposedly the industrial land along the river is supposed to be used for river uses. How is a drone testing facility a river use?
Well, what they're claiming is that they need to be able to fly over the Willamette because the testing of this technology is too dangerous to fly over human heads because the drones can lose control and crash. So their assumption is that this area of the river is vacant and open for their use. That is far, far from the case. There's an ever-increasing amount of river users here every year.
There's a lot of traffic on the river, myself included. It's used by kayakers, recreational fishermen, etc., not to mention, you know, the wildlife and our birds of prey. And I think that, you know, this issue of land use, they're trying to spin it both ways by saying, one, this land has been vacant for so long, no one wants it, so we're going to put a use that isn't really river dependent on there. We're going to put something that, you know, we could take to a desert or to some uninhabited place and put it in Portland because this river has been historically mistreated, so we're going to continue to mistreat it. And then also, on the other hand, they're making a case for developing other wildlands by saying that they don't have enough property. It just sounds like a huge case of mismanagement to me.
What kind of impact would this drone facility have? Let's start first with the wildlife, actually. There's a poster that I saw that would be for an event that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, where there it's the St. John's Bridge, and I think there's an eagle or a hawk flying over, and then all these drones. So let's first of all talk about the impact that it would have, maybe not just on the bird life, but maybe also on the rest of the wildlife that lives along the river corridor.
Yeah, it's actually supposed to be a peregrine falcon because we do have had a nesting pair on the bridge here for 20 years now. Bob Salinger from Audubon Society actually says it's one of the most productive nesting pairs that he's ever helped steward over his time at Audubon. But you don't have to search far on YouTube to find all sorts of raptor-drone interactions that don't end well for the birds. There's no reason to believe that that won't happen here. And it's, yeah, there's tons of raptors here, way beyond peregrines. There's eagles, turkey vultures, hawks, ospreys. All of those birds defend their airspace if they need to guard the food source.
Yeah, absolutely. There are actually two bald eagles circling over my house on the day that I learned about this project. We have some really amazing wildlife out here that, you know, has been so resilient in the face of everything that we've done to their habitat. And I think that, you know, speaking to whatever wildlife is here and also the people, what's happening is, you know, a recognition of this like legacy of exploitation that is perpetuated by a project like this. And if we, you know, continue to exploit and negatively impact the land, the environment, when will it ever stop? You know, and I think that we're here to change that, to change that story and to tell the port that they have to stop and that we need to wind back the clock and make places for these animals to be.
Actually, besides the raptors, I would imagine that there's also some mammals that are living around the river. I know at Swan Island one time I was walking along what's become that river walk around Swan Island, and there were a couple river otters that were just playing in the river and floating on logs and things like that. And I'm assuming that there's river otters. I'm assuming that there's probably beavers. Do you have wildlife like that as well that would also be impacted by the drones?
We just did a beach walk the other day and noticed tail drag marks from a beaver in the area. And then I see river otters playing on our dock all the time. So they're here.
You're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Leah Holland, who's with Fight for the Future, and Matt Stein with Green Anchors about a drone testing facility in North Portland that they think, and a lot of people think, is a very bad idea. So let's talk about what this place was like before it was degraded by the Port of Portland.
I wasn't here, but and it's way more than just the Port of Portland. I mean, there's a lot of this land is privately owned and has been a long time. A lot of private facilities. If you look across the river from here, you can look up and see beautiful Forest Park, but you can look right straight across and see tank farm after tank farm. Owned by various petroleum companies, on a known to be will be a liquefaction zone when the big earthquake hits, but that's a topic for another show. Prior to that, though, I mean, The river, a lot of the river bank is fill. The river course has been changed over the years. It used to flow around the other side of Swan Island. Now it's on the west side. Yeah, a lot of this area is built on fill, obviously, so it looked a lot different.
Well, I mean, going all the way back, this site that we're talking about specifically is really historically significant. It was a village site for the Chinook people, and also, according to records that our community has been looking at to learn more about this place that we're proposing to put drones, it's one of the first, it is the first known place that a person of African descent landed on these shores. It's an important part of our legacy and our history, and an important site to First Nations people that is on the chopping block, as it were.
Yeah, actually, I think that it's hard for a lot of settler descendants to recognize that this area was actually a very actively habitated place by people until the settlers came. And it's really stark to recognize how much of that's been erased. Do you think that this drone facility goes further in erasing that kind of legacy?
I believe so. Yeah, I mean, or it takes away an opportunity to actually recognize the legacy and create something here. It's a very small piece of property in the grand scheme of things, especially where the port is concerned. And so, yeah, a lot of us are leaning, at least suggesting that they could actually, give something back at this point.
We're both recognizing that we want to know more about the history of St. John's and of this place and of our wildlife and everything that's happening on the river and what could be here if we were to heal the damage that's been done. And I absolutely agree with Matt that use of that land that's more towards that purpose would be far more appropriate than military drone testing.
Well, let's get into this drone testing now. Who is behind this drone testing facility?
So Verizon, which is the cell phone company essentially, is testing right now in different parts around the country and with international partners the ability to fly drones using their new 5G cell phone network. And they're looking for, they purchased a company called Skyward that is based in Portland and are looking to set up a testing facility for them in this location. The applications for these drones, well, some of them are legitimate, agriculture, et cetera, also include potential military uses. Verizon just announced last month a partnership to test Department of Defense approved drones in collaboration with a company based in Paris. And also they're actively testing drones with the US military down in California. So they've been pretty unclear about exactly what the applications for these drone tests will be and what this technology will ultimately be used for. And because of that and the lack of restrictions or any type of regulation really on drones, it's an extremely problematic project that we don't want to be complicit in.
How did you all find out about this proposed drone facility? Is this something that has been publicly announced, or was this more or less a secret?
We became aware of it a little bit earlier than most because we're the neighboring property and things started happening over there. Really, the first official notification to the public wasn't until the permitting process had already begun. The port had already agreed to lease the land. They haven't signed a lease yet, but they've been in negotiations with Verizon for many months now. And it wasn't until the Greenway Review was actually mailed out to the property owners around the site. Unfortunately, Greenway Review only requires a 150-foot radius around the site, so that included about three companies and nobody in the actual neighborhood. But it does go to the land use chair and the chair of neighborhood associations, so that's how it really first started to get to the community, other than that I'd already told about it.
What is a Greenway Review?
Here along the river, there's what's known as the Greenway. It's the belt between active use of the land and the river itself. And so since they're working on a riverfront site, they had to show that they were in compliance with Greenway use. They're not really planning on being right up to the river's edge.
And as somebody who lives in the area, really dislikes drones and is a advocate against surveillance technology with a fraught past relationship with Verizon, I wasn't made aware of this until, I believe, last week when somebody reached out to our organization from the Portland Harbor Community Coalition. It's amazing how little how little I knew about something that I'm so vehemently opposed to.
Actually, just talk a bit about your organization. What is Fight for the Future?
So Fight for the Future is a national digital rights advocacy nonprofit. We rose during the fight for net neutrality, which is the concept that the internet should be open with equal access to all content. So Verizon, for example, was very eager to have an internet in which they can decide that they're partnered with Google and you can't go to any non-Google sites without paying a premium fee, just like a TV package or something like that. And we made a large historic stink about that. And the net neutrality fight is kind of fallow right now because the Trump administration supports restricted and monopolized internet. But hopefully we'll be able to be active on that issue again. And in the meantime, we're advocating on a variety of digital rights issues, including the recent facial recognition ban in Portland, as well as facial recognition bans nationally, internet access during the pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm based in Portland and particularly attuned to what's happening in my own community. And they are, you know, both gracious and eager to lend their resources to me as a local activist to help fight this terrible idea in my backyard.
So how does this connect? How does this drone testing facility connect with the other work that your organization does?
As an organization, we believe that surveillance is fundamentally incompatible with a free society, and that any technology that perpetuates the constant surveillance of people is a bad technology. To surveillance, even, you know, naysayers will argue that they have nothing to hide, but the concept of being watched 24/7, no matter where you are, has a very distinct and proven social chilling effect that restricts what we do and our feelings of freedom if we feel that we're always being watched and recorded. You know, I personally, just to share a little anecdote, used to live on a property where my neighbor's adult son would fly a drone over with a camera over my head and follow me around the property when I was outside, including when I was like swimming in the river and things like that. And as somebody who had a traumatic childhood rife with abuse, that was incredibly painful. And every time I hear a drone now, I'm triggered and I am taken back to those times and those predators. So I very much personally also do not want this anywhere near my community and anywhere near the places like Cathedral Park, Kelly Point Park, the Willamette River, Forest Park, the places that I go to relax and enjoy the beautiful place that I live.
Now, I've heard some people advocate for drones, particularly photographers and cinematographers, because it's a great way to get aerial shots. It's much cheaper than having to hire a helicopter or a plane. I wonder if there's any way to distinguish between that use of drone technology and the surveillance, whether it's government surveillance or whether it's snoopy neighbor surveillance.
Absolutely. It's regulation, and we have almost none. On drones, there are ways to use this technology appropriately, and our society just isn't keeping up with the advancement of these technologies. We don't have any sort of privacy legislation, really, that we can point to defend ourselves from the encroachment of these machines. And until we do, I don't think that we should be bringing them into our communities more. I think we should be actively fighting for a society that doesn't let technology run rampant over our peace and our safety.
One big point of differentiation we can point to, though, is you know, if you're taking photos, using it for a film shoot or whatever, you have a pilot right there that's controlling the drone within line of sight. And it's only one drone. You're talking about the technology they want to develop is flying fleets of drones from a central location, autonomously, whatever they choose to do. And that's, you know, completely different from me out in at the park trying to get a good picture of the bridge.
Well, also, it's a concern about them being tied into 5G networks, and already 5G networks trigger a lot of people's paranoia and concern. But what would be the difference between having them being controlled by these 5G towers as opposed to being controlled by a pilot who's on the ground?
Again, it's just the amount, the number of drones they can fly at any one time, and they don't have to be within line of sight. That's the big difference, is beyond line of sight flight. And and just autonomous flight. I mean, they can program a drone to go fly a regular route around the neighborhood just to check on things, and nobody even has to be at the controls working it.
Just think about the level of errors that happen in computer code and in experimentation. You know, if you can't see it and you aren't controlling it, then to a large extent, like, we're relying on these algorithms and these technologies that are often error prone, because ultimately they are built by humans to control something that is a potentially lethal projectile. It's a bad idea, especially around population centers and flying over people. They say flying it over the river is good because there's no one there. And I want to, you know, again, reiterate, I'm there and I don't want that thing crashing into my kayak.
I'm actually a little bit concerned about it flying so close to the St. John's Bridge, because the facility is, what, maybe less than a mile north of the bridge, isn't it?
Yeah, the bridge, the tank farms across the river, the neighborhoods all around it, including Linton.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize fully the implications of the tank farms until you just said that again. So, you know, future news headline: drone crashes into tank farm, igniting explosions along St. John's River, an oil spill. They want to, you know, test these drones at our expense.
And these aren't just little drones. They're talking about right now just things up to 55 pounds, which can do some serious damage. But who knows what the Army's going to bring down to want to try to test out. And they want to bring, it's not Verizon that's building these drones. They just want to integrate other companies' drones with their network. And so we don't know anything about who these companies are or which agencies or who they plan to work with.
And that's a very important point here, because one of the things that we see time and time again with these developing technologies is that mission creep is inevitable. Verizon may come out and say that they're only going to test drones for agricultural and construction uses that make us safer, that they're going to use their drones to, like, fly people to stranded hikers and rescue them, or, you know, whatever the heck PR spin they're going to put on what's happening at this facility. But once they have this foothold and once they have this permit for this testing, they A, don't have to tell us what they're testing, and then B, can have the standing to come back to the city and say, well, now we want to expand. And the prospect of fighting that each time throughout and being keeping an eye on it, even, because the city's reporting processes to this community have been abhorrent, is exhausting. Like, I want to fight this once and I want to put it to bed. I don't want to be fighting this for the rest of my life.
You're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Leah Holland with Fight for the Future and Matt Stein with Green Anchors about a drone testing facility in North Portland that they think is a very bad idea. Leah, you were talking about this kind of mission creep of how things are described one way for the initial permit and how they shift form and become more and more odious in future incarnations. What kind of examples can you point to that show this along the river? Because it makes me think of some of the permits that have been granted in the port for oil facilities in particular that have been granted for one guise and then have been changed to something else that's far more dangerous than the initial permit.
You know, I'm not super educated on the oil facilities down by the river and what the mission creep there has been. I can say from my perspective working on similar technologies, for example, facial recognition, which the city of Portland recently banned for both public and private use, that I'm working on a campaign right now in which facial recognition, which was purported to be a safety enhancer to identify criminals on a university campus, was used, according to students, to identify them as they were peacefully protesting for more COVID-19 protections at their university and call them into a disciplinary meeting. You have to think about these new technologies and the move fast and break things Silicon Valley mindset as in their human terms and in almost a science fiction Black Mirror like focus forward towards what the eventualities of these technologies might be. So if you think about, you know, this, we want to fly drones over the Willamette, and you know, and test them and help these farmers better tend to their crops. That's a great story. But 5 years down the road, are they going to be wanting to fly these drones over our cities so that they can do like real-time route previews for their Verizon Maps app or what have you? Are they going to be wanting to test some technology like facial recognition or person tracking flying over the heads of people in St. John's when this technology is, quote unquote, proven safe and won't crash into people anymore? These are the questions that we have to ask ourselves. We can't just look at what's in front of us. We have to look at what might come moving forward as we fight these technologies.
Well, given that Portland has just passed a facial recognition ban that I understand is pretty strict, how can they get away with doing any kind of facial recognition testing with these drones?
Oh, I'm not saying that they could get away with facial recognition testing specifically, but there are plenty of other types of invasive surveillance that they could be testing on our communities, or they could just zoom their drones over the hill into North Plains or wherever else and test on those communities that don't have the same protections that people in Portland do.
Well, Matt, I was wondering, do you have any kind of historic memory of some of these facilities along the river in your neighborhood and across the river from your neighborhood where a business was given a permit for one thing and it has transformed itself into something much more odious?
One example I can think of, there upriver there's an oil, what used to be an oil offload terminal that I think has now been converted into an oil from train to ship terminal, and that's where a lot of the Bakken crude, I think, has been actually coming into town and being offloaded and put onto ships. I don't know the latest on that. I know that they were actually expanding that facility to do that, but that was not the original purpose of that facility. And then I know that some of the LNG proposals that have been going on, Coos Bay, Astoria, and I think even somewhere on here locally, were originally to be import facilities. And then once we started our fracking boom here, now they've, you know, they can easily switch them to be export facilities. I don't know if any of them have actually been built yet.
Well, actually, the ones in Astoria are dead. Those never happened. And the one down in Coos Bay is being fought and probably won't happen. And I think the oil transloading facility you're talking about is Zenith, which we've done a lot of coverage on this show. And that, to me, that's one I was really thinking about. Though the same thing's happening out in Clatskanie with Global Partners with another possible oil train facility there. It's one of the concerns that a lot of activists have, and that once a company gets a permit. And in the case with Zenith, I mean, it was a different company that had this permit. It was an asphalt terminal, and Zenith has turned it into an oil terminal. And they did it with an existing permit and with very little oversight from DEQ. So is DEQ involved in this process at all of permitting the drone facility?
I'm unsure. I've heard in our meetings that the environmental review on this has been pretty darn minimal.
I guess one of the things that concerns me is how this was crept in the shadows until suddenly it's getting a permit. It's in the permit process now. Is that correct? Or it's the first stage of the permitting?
We're anticipating that possibly at their next meeting in a couple of weeks, they're going to be deciding on whether to issue this permit. And it's really unfortunate that we have so little time to organize and spread awareness about what's happening.
Now, in the past, this has happened before. I don't know if you guys remember the Pembina propane terminal that was proposed for right across from Hayden Island back in, I think it was 2014. And that, again, was being just kind of slipped through the shadows, and the port had given an approval, and the city of Portland was about to approve it, and activists found out about it kind of at the 11th hour. And because there was one exemption that the company had to get in order to get this pipeline, there was a very short pipeline through, that was the grounds that people were able to fight and eventually defeat this propane terminal from being built. So there's history for stopping things in very short notice. So are you learning some of the lessons from how to create a very quick fight in a very short time?
Yeah, absolutely. We are doing our best to pull together multiple protests, press releases, getting coverage, you know, like on this show, just to spread the word and get it out there. And we're also throwing ourselves into research to learn more about what this process has been and who the players are. One of the most disturbing things that we found, which is a huge conflict of interest in my opinion, is that Verizon employs Strategies 360, which is a lobbying firm that has, you know, offices in Portland. And one of the lobbyists at Strategies 360 is actually the husband of a Portland official. And this is extremely concerning for a number of reasons, foremost in the railroading of this facility that Strategies 360 is actively lobbying on through the Port of Portland with minimal oversight and community input, and those personal relationships being the fuel for the fire that's driving drones into North Portland. That's really concerning and something that the port has not yet addressed in any sort of capacity that I'm aware of.
That stuff has to be disclosed, doesn't it? I think legally, any kind of conflict of interest.
I'm not sure exactly what the regulations are on that specifically. I would have to look more into that.
And I would just say more generally, I have a friend that's worked for the port for 30 years. I know some other folks that I've talked to. The port does not feel obligated, apparently, to really consult the public much on use of the public lands that they steward, especially in relation to the maritime side of things. I know at the airport, there's committees that citizens can sit on and advise, you know, as far as the noise and other impacts of the airport itself. But when it comes to the marine side, they seem to have very little desire to talk to the public about what they do with our land.
That needs to change.
So how is that going to change? Because one of the problems of the Port of Portland is it's an appointed port board. The Port Commission is appointed by the governor. So we don't have any impact on who the Port Commissioners can be through any kind of elections.
I think that it's through processes like this when the port, you know, oversteps, in my opinion, in allowing these use of our lands for things that we, the public, don't agree with, that we're able to see these failures of the Port of Portland Commission and these appointees to take the public interest into account and organize ourselves to call for not only the stopping of this facility, but also for better oversight and community input and officials who put us first, not corporate interests.
So what's your strategy in the next few weeks to, first of all, get out the word about this proposed drone facility and then to stop it, actually?
So right now we are going all out to spread the word and to make people aware that this is happening. We have a protest and press conference planned for October 27th at noon at the Skyward offices on NATO Parkway in downtown Portland. And then there's a community listening session, which everyone should attend. I've heard, you know, rumors that lobbyists are going to try to pack this meeting with people who are pro-drone, pro-facility. And we who are opposed to this need to show up in great numbers to this listening session, which is October 27th at 6 p.m. It's a digital session, so it's very easy to attend as long as you have access to decent internet. And the details for all of this information, as well as the petition to stop this, are available at the URL fftf.link/dronespdx.
And if you can send that to me, we'll also put it on the website.
Also, we are organizing a mass protest and Halloween flotilla to show that we use the river. On November 1st at noon, that's at the Cathedral Park boat launch. Those who have boats are highly encouraged to attend, as well as, you know, everybody else who's landbound. We need to show up in numbers to demonstrate that this is not a facility that we want anywhere in Portland, and definitely not next to our beautiful Cathedral Park. So those are the main things that we have organized now. It's just it's a question of spreading the word, and everybody who's listening to this and who thinks that this is a terrible idea too, getting the word out to their friends, family, and community members, and sharing that they don't want this to happen in Portland. It's only through public outcry that we can stop this facility at this point, this late in the game.
Now, are there any other port meetings or anything like that that people can attend, or has that already happened?
It's mostly already happened, hasn't it, Matt?
Yeah, some of us testified at the Port Commission meeting last week. They have that monthly, so if this is still, if we still got this thing hanging in the balance by next commission meeting, we would certainly like to see people testify at that. Otherwise, continuing to every Wednesday, people can sign up to testify at the City of Portland Commission hearing, which I did this morning.
How did that go?
Good. I give you 3 minutes. There's no feedback, but I know that three people did it the week before. There was two of us today. Hopefully more can do next week and from then on.
The city of Portland actually is going to be the one that grants the permits. Is that correct?
Yeah, and last Wednesday, Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Hardesty both pledged to check with their respective bureaus as to where these permits were in the process with PBOT and with BDS and just see where things stand and if there's any issues. You know, one thing, BDS agreed with Verizon right off the bat, apparently, that this was a river-related, river-dependent use. And gave them the go-ahead. So, you know, that's one issue that could be brought up to change the city's position.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have, here in Portland, we are lucky enough to have one of the most anti-surveillance, pro-privacy administrations of any major city in the entire country. I'm very much hoping to hear from our commissioners and perhaps our mayor as well. On this facility and to have them oppose its construction, because this falls right in line with their being opposed to facial recognition surveillance in our communities.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Leah Holland with Fight for the Future and Matt Stein with Green Anchors about a proposed drone testing facility in North Portland that would be built for the use of Verizon. And we've been talking about all of the concerns from the community about why this is not a very good idea. Well, in the last few moments, I'd like to talk about what kind of community reaction have you gotten and what is the general sense? Can you get a sense of how the St. John's and wider North Portland communities feel about having this drone facility in their neighborhood?
I've yet to discuss it with anyone that's come out in favor of it. As soon as you talk about large-scale drones flying around our airspace, it's pretty much a no-brainer for just about anyone here. This is not a big jobs issue. I mean, they've already established their R&D facility here in the neighborhood. We're just saying, no, you can't fly them here. So, you know, your pilots that are already employed got to head up, you know, north of Vancouver or wherever they can find a piece of land that people won't run them out. Otherwise, I mean, it's just there's no reason to believe that this is anything that's a big economic boom for the neighborhood or that this is going to bring a ton of jobs or anything like that. So it's just another annoyance that we all know we're going to have to deal with if it happens.
Well, have you actually talked to neighbors and gotten a sense of how people in general are feeling about this?
Oh, yeah. The Cathedral Park Neighborhood Association already wrote a letter in opposition. I believe St. John's was doing the same, and I believe Linton was also authoring a letter to, or hopefully got it in time before the land use decision comment period ended.
Well, I keep thinking back to the Pembina days and how a huge grassroots movement in opposition to it arose within days, and really packed city council every week. And change the course of history, basically. And actually, I think that was one of the things that got Charlie Hales to not run for second term for mayor. So I'm wondering if you see a way to get that kind of momentum going in the Portland-wide community.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you hear military drone testing and that immediately harkens most of us back to this summer when the military was flying drones over our protesters, surveilling them, monitoring their cell phone communications, etc. We have a very established viewpoint in Portland about, you know, these machines and the lack of regulation on them and how they've been used against us. So I think that the potential for Portland to come together and rally to reject Verizon's plans is huge. I truly believe that we can stop this thing if we all do our part.
Now, is there a place on the web where people can get more information? Is it just the website that you gave, or are there other places where people can find out more about this proposed drone facility?
Yeah, that link that I gave is the best one. That's fftf.link/dronespdx.
And so, let's talk a bit more about what people could be doing. There's the two actions that you described. I want to talk a bit more about the one on the day after Halloween and how people can get engaged in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are having a community event starting at 12 p.m. Of course, masks and distancing are required. We want to be COVID safe. This is an on-the-ground rally and also a flotilla of kayakers, canoers, rafters, boats, whatever you got, if it floats and you feel good using it in November in Portland, bring it to the river, bring it to the Cathedral Park boat launch, and let's get out there and show them that that we use the river. Fight for the Future's Facebook page also has an event where people can RSVP to this and find more information on the entire project. That's Fight for the Future's Facebook. And there's really, you know, no limit to both how fun and how awesome this event can be as a joyful rejection of the entire premise of military drone testing in North Portland.
Well, for those of you who have a memory that goes back 5 years, you might remember that the boat launch site at Cathedral Park, which is just almost under the bridge, under the St. John's Bridge, as the famous spot where Greenpeace danglers hung from the bridge and stopped Fenica Icebreaker from leaving the port of Portland to go back up to explore for oil off the shores or off the coast of Alaska. My other concern is, are people going to be socially distanced as well as wearing masks there?
Absolutely. We're definitely encouraging that. We're also emphasizing the flotilla because it's pretty easy to distance in a boat. No party boats, people.
Okay. Only with immediate family.
Oh, yeah, there you go. And this is also a family-friendly event, we should mention. Like, kids are welcome, costumes are welcome. Like, we can have a really good time down there even as we're standing up against something that's a big bummer.
Now, after that, what are your plans?
I mean, after that, it's just continuing to oppose the facility through whatever means possible and necessary. I think that there's a lot of space for the city to take a look at the growing opposition to this facility and to take a stand to stop it. There's a lot of space for the Port of Portland to reply to potential conflicts of interest as well as community backlash and reconsider what they're doing. It's our hope that, you know, we're able to show everyone involved very quickly that this is not going to fly in North Portland, pun intended.
And just knowing that people are, so that people know that the lease is not a done deal, the permit is not a done deal, continued pressure on city commissioners, port commissioners, any other employees at the port that might be involved in this, phone calls and emails just to let them know that we're still on this and not going to go away quietly.
If you are infuriated by this, if you want to stand up against it, like if you were to make a daily phone call to Commissioner Hardesty or Commissioner Udaly, just set an alarm and call the number and leave a comment. That's a great way to help. You know, you can take action against this thing every single day until we have a decision and we're either chaining ourselves to the front of this building or we are celebrating and dancing on the ruins of Verizon's drone dreams.
Provided that you are able to dance on the ruins of Verizon's plans, what would you like to see happen in that space along the river?
I think that we've already laid out a lot of principles here about what that type of space should be used for moving forward, and the desire for education and investment and the history of First Nations and the ecology of the area for our community. I think that we're in a really, really amazing place, and most of us don't know quite how amazing it is. So investment in a learning facility, something like that, that invites all the community in and that sort of opens more of the riverfront to our enjoyment instead of exploitation would be appropriate for a site that the city has struggled so long to find a use for. Give it to us. Let's build something better.
And who would that us be? I'm imagining, Matt, would you want to expand Green Anchors possibly, or find a...
No. My plate's full here. There's any number of Native groups, other nonprofits that are working on environmental justice, environmental cleanup, that kind of thing. Maybe it's a coalition of those types of groups that they could hand it over to and let them steward it from here on out.
A fantastic,
amazing opportunity for the riverbank restoration to happen here. Something similar to what happened over in Linton Plywood creates new habitat here.
Yeah, actually, I was talking with Bob Salinger the other day, and he would like to see a much more contiguous renaturing of the riverbank on both sides of the river, and talking to the people in the city who kind of see it as, well, the port in particular see it as, well, we'll have some nature around the margins. And Bob is talking about, no, that doesn't really work. So how would this help us to not just have nature on the margins of the port, but maybe start making nature an integral part of the Port of Portland?
I think that bringing back nature helps us mentally and emotionally. It helps our sense of place. It helps beautify and heal our community after, you know, a century plus of exploitation and poisoning. It also works to serve the non-human residents of St. John's by giving them a place to live. You talk about, you know, otters that are playing on the dock with you know, oil tankers all around. I think that, like, these non-human species deserve places where they're safe, where they're able to live in the nature they're evolutionarily suited for. I think that that's a really beautiful vision. And, you know, whatever happens, I think that, you know, the Port of Portland, you know, calling together a community work group that includes organizations like the Portland Harbor Community Coalition and other, you know, interested and educated parties to do the visioning for what can happen on this site would be a great first step. Like, we can speculate here about what we should do with the site, but really I think the input from a much broader and more diverse group of people is needed before anything could move forward. And we have people from across the spectrum standing up ready to make that happen and to be a part of it. So, you know, let's do it. Let's put something awesome there. What that is, I'm totally open to.
And how about you, Matt?
That's it. Got nothing more to add.
Well, it's really been great to talk to both of you. Nice to meet you today. And I'm looking forward to many more conversations as we all work together to really recreate a natural and human landscape along the river, where right now it's pretty industrialized. So thank you both.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking with Leah Holland with Fight for the Future and Matt Stein with Green Anchors. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, Coast Community Radio in Astoria, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff, who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us through these difficult times, if you're able, by becoming a member of KBOO during this fall pledge drive, or renewing your membership. We aren't in the station to take your calls, but you can show your support by going to kboo.fm and clicking the donate button, or you can also mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. If you donate now through October 31st, your contribution will be matched dollar per dollar up to $4,500. Once again, thanks for supporting KBOO. Next week, we'll get a youth perspective on the strange reality we've been living through, with Ezra Cohen, a teenage bird expert and nature activist. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Thanks for listening. We'll go out with some music by the Neville Brothers. Stay safe, wash your hands, remember to wear a mask, and don't forget to vote.
Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. Well, I know.